Welcome back to the Tzach Study Center series on Avim Rishonim. In today's shiur, we're going to study the last four chapters of Sefer Shmuel Bet, from Perek Chaf Aleph to Chaf Dalet, chapters 21 to 24. We're going to identify them as a unit. We're going to attribute this entire unit to the Navi Gad, a Navi who was so much earlier in David's life. We're going to claim that the events in these four chapters took place much earlier in the life of David. We'll prove that from a parallel study of the book of Divrei HaYamim. And then we'll have to explain, after identifying what happened in these chapters and who they were written by, we need to try to explain why they formed the conclusion and the last unit of the book of Shmuel. We're going to begin our share with a quick review of what takes place in each of these chapters. With a review of those events, try to explain why it makes more sense that they took place earlier in the life of David. Then we're going to explain why they form a unit. And then we're going to compare them to what takes place in the book of Divrei HaYamim and take this opportunity to understand what's the difference between the book of Divrei HaYamim and the book of Shmuel. So let's begin with a quick review of what takes place in these four chapters. Perek Chaf Aleph, we already began our study of those events in our last year to help prove that a unit ended with chapter 20. Recall in our previous year, in fact, we spent several shiurim to identify the prophetic unit of Chet David Vonsho, David's sin, and the ensuing punishment. That began back in chapter 9 and continued all the way to chapter 20. At the end of chapter 20, it seems quite late in the reign of David, but finally we've returned to a monarchy which is established and accepted by all the people. We put down the final revolt of Shevem ben Bichri, and those events seem to be taking place much later in David's life, probably closer to the end of his life. Nonetheless, chapter 21, story of the mistreatment of the Givonim by Shaul, and the ensuing punishment that the Jewish people had from that, seems to have happened much earlier in the life of David. Let's explain why. It's a very bizarre story, because there's a terrible famine in the land. God tells David the reason for this famine is because of the mistreatment of the Givonim by the house of Shaul. And it doesn't make sense that if that's the reason for this terrible famine, that it would take place several decades after the events took place. It seems like Shaul mistreated the Givonim. Remember, there was a treaty between the Givonim and the Jewish people since the time of Yeshua. And because Shaul's palace and the area where his was in the middle of the heart of the hills of Binyamin, near what's Pisgat Zev today, or Givat Shaul in the time of the Bible, not too far from the present-day city of Ramoth, and El Jib, where the ancient site of Givon is, which has been identified by finding the famous Brechan Givon, where Avner and Yoav had the famous battle of Yisachaku Anarim Lefanenu. All those sites have been identified, almost beyond a shadow of a doubt. So the area of where the Givonim were living was very close to Shaul, and it seems like Shaul's men and Shaul's government mistreated the Givonim in establishing their capital in that area. God tells David that the only way which we can stop this terrible famine is to appease the Givonim. David approaches the Givonim, asks them what they desire. In a situation which is very strange, the Givonim demand the death of several descendants of the house of Shaul, and David acquiesces to that request and gives over seven descendants of the house of Shaul in order to be executed. Again, this story does not have a date stamp on it, but it makes a lot of sense that these events took place earlier in the life of David. We should also mention that here's yet another example of the theme that we were following early in our study of Sefer Shmuel, that if we did not have a Navi telling us these events and explaining these events, how they really happened, someone would think quite the opposite. If you didn't have a Navi telling us why these seven descendants of Shaul were executed, if you were just following what we called before a tabloid, it looks like David, now that he became into power, now that he became king, goes around executing the royal family that he took over. Here he takes over the house of Shaul, and not only did Ishbosheth, the descendant of Shaul, came into power, not only was he executed and his head cut off by Rechavim Ba'ana, now we have seven other descendants of Shaul, maybe possible heirs to the kingdom, being executed by the king. And it looks like David's simply protecting his kingdom. This story is coming to explain to us there was a religious reason for this, that God agreed to this action. And again, we need this prophecy, this nevuah, to appreciate the actions of David, to understand the hand of God behind him, and not to view him as his cruel political leader. In Perek Chaf Bet, we have what's referred to as Shirat David, the famous song of David. And it could be that the chapter division here might be a little misleading, because at the end of chapter 21, there's several psukim in the conclusion that talk about another battle of David fighting the Plishtim. Here was a battle where David was almost injured in that battle, and Abishai and some of his warriors had to come help David and save him from an unpleasant situation. Chapter 22 It's a very lengthy perek, very difficult to understand a lot of the words, but it's a very beautiful one. It's also read as a haftarah, but it's sung by David, according to the opening pasuk, on the day that he won his battles against all of his enemies and against Shaul. Now, if this song was sung by David when God saved him from his enemies and from Shaul, that for sure is something that happened much earlier in his life. Most of David's battles was before he began his rebellion against Shaul, began the whole civil war. And then later when he fought Shaul, then later when he became king. But towards the end of his kingdom, he doesn't have that many battles with outside enemies. Most of his battles are much earlier. And soon we'll see in Divrei Hayamim that this would all apply much earlier in his life. So again, we find a Shirah of David after his battles, which seem to have happened much earlier. The prophetic meaning of this Shirah is also very important. In fact, we're going to discuss this in our next share much more in detail. But here we see how David attributes all of his victory to God, even though he did all the fighting himself. If you want to compare this Shirah, for example, to the Shirat Hayam, which was also a tremendous song sung by the people of Israel after the great miracle of crossing the Red Sea, to sing a song of God's praise after witnessing such a tremendous miracle, which was beyond a shadow of a doubt a miracle, it's beautiful, but that's no big deal. To treat a victory, a military victory, through natural means, when you don't see major miracles like Kriyat Yam, like splitting of the Red Sea, but rather fighting battles, b'derech hateva, through natural means. And usually when people fight battles like that, they attribute the glory and the success to the soldiers themselves. Every army suffers from this problem. To be able to win so many military victories through natural means and attribute all those victories to God in such a beautiful way, that's going to be the cutting edge of David. And we're going to see in our last year how that makes David different than Shaul, and that's going to be one of the main reasons why David is chosen to be the king of Israel. As we explained before, David has the ability not only to be a great leader and to be successful and to become popular, but to attribute all that success to the God of Israel. And that concept of being a somebody, being a great person, and even though he's a person worthy of tremendous praise, attributing all that praise to God, is that character that's going to be one of the main reasons why David and his monarchy is chosen to become the eternal monarchy and a model for monarchy for all future generations. In chapter 23, in Perachav Gimel, the first seven psukim are yet another shirah, introduced as Eile Divrei David Hachronim, another beautiful poem, quite different than the one in chapter 22. But also very beautiful, also quite difficult to understand. When that was written, it seems like from the header, these are Divrei David Hachronim. In my opinion, they form sort of a conclusion or an add-on to his first Shira in chapter 22. But I don't think they form the conclusion of the book. I don't think they're the conclusion of David's life. It's yet another song where David expresses his thanks and his appreciation of God and how he sees God in all the events of his life. However, the main discussion of chapter 23 begins in Pasachet, in verse 8, Eile Shmot HaGiborim Asher LeDavid, etc., etc. We have a list of all the great soldiers and all the great men and the valiant men in the army of David. We have the rank, we have groups of three, and who's the best. And each group sometimes has short stories about great acts of heroics that are done by certain people. And this list is found in chapter 11 in Divrei Hayamim. If you look at the book of Chronicles, Divrei Hayamim Aleph, we're going to find this list of Giborim very early in the life of David. And after we have this list of Giborim, we're going to see at the end of chapter 12 of Divrei Hayamim Aleph, we're going to see how these Giborim came with David from Hebron and went and established the capital of Israel in Yerushalayim. So this is a story which for sure belongs early in the life of David, when he's still king in Hebron as he's moving his capital to Yerushalayim. And there we'll have a clear proof that this event and these names all took place much earlier in David's life. Finally, in chapter 24, we have the beautiful story of how Har HaBayit was chosen. We have a story about how the place where the Beit HaMikdash is going to be built, and the Mizbeach for God, the permanent site for the temple, is going to be chosen in light of these events. And yet again, we're going to see in our study of Divrei Hayamim that this event happened much earlier in David's life. Nonetheless, Sefer Shmuel saves it and is going to use it as its closing chapter. If you look at the opening line of chapter 24, it says, "Vayosef Hashem lacharot b'Yisrael." God once again punished the people of Israel. "Vayaseh to David behem lemor lech menei et Yisrael vet Yehuda." And David is sort of tricked or enticed into sinning and having a desire to count the people of Israel. The opening line seems to connect it to the story that happened in chapter 21. There's yet another plague of the people of Israel, another terrible time, and the Navi has to explain why the Jewish people were being punished. There's no doubt that this mifkad, this counting of the people, the census, is of a military nature, and it's not clear whether David was simply counting because he wanted to know how many people were in his army, and it was a sense of pride, but not purely for military reasons, and that might be the problem, or it could be they counted and didn't use the machzit ha-shekel in the proper way. You can see that argument among the commentators. But in the outcome of this story, we find a very interesting dialogue between God and David. God is very angered by the census of the people, and a terrible plague and terrible punishment is about to take place. But God gives David a choice of three different punishments that he can receive. God tells David, you can either suffer 3 years of famine, or you can suffer 3 years of losing battles to your enemy, or you can take 3 days of deter, a terrible plague, a terrible disease, where many people would die, but it would be much shorter. David's famous answer, which we're going to use to identify who's the author of this entire unit, is something which we say every day in Tefillah, every day in Davening, after Shmoneh Esrei, when we begin Tachnun, we say, "Vayomer David el Gad, tzar li mi'od, nipnana bi'ad Hashem, ki rabim rachamav, u'bi'ad adam alapola." We quote here the words of David, where David answers this question, this terrible question which God faces him with, what punishment would you prefer? David says, give me the direct punishment from God. Nipnana bi'ad Hashem, let me fall in front of God. Let me take the dever, let me take the most difficult punishment, the one that comes intense and right away, and don't let me fall in the hands of my enemies or in the hands of man. David prefers a punishment directly from God because he knows Ki Rabim Rachamav, he has tremendous mercy, and even though the punishment might be more intense, there's a greater chance that God will have mercy. In order that God should have mercy on his people, David goes to pray to Hashem, and at that time the Mishkan was in Givon. Remember, the node of the city of the Kohanim was destroyed by Shaul, and the Mishkan was moved to Givon. The Aron was in Yerushalayim, and they're not going to come together until the time of Shlomo, but in the meantime, the Mishkan is still in Givon. Shlomo himself goes to Givon to pray before the Beit HaMikdash is built. And David was on his way to pray to God in Givon. Shortly after leaving his own city, the city of David, or David, walking up the next hill, he stops, he sees the Malach of God, and God tells him to bring a Korban here. David buys the field from Arabna the Jebusite, from Arabna Hivusi. He buys the field. He also buys the animals that he was plowing the field with, and he makes a Korban. God listens to his tefillah. He answers the Korban, the offering that David brings. And in thanks and appreciation of God answering his tefillah and stopping the plague, David says at the end, as we'll see also in Divrei Yamim, that this site will be the place where the Beit HaMikdash will be built, and this will be the site of the permanent Mizbeach, the altar for God. This will be the place where God answers tefillah. This is to be the place where the Jewish people can pray to God, and God will answer the requests. It's a very difficult story to understand all its details, yet a very beautiful story of David's dedication to God, his recognition again of a mistake, of a sin, and how prayer is able to turn around a terrible gzardin, a terrible decree, a terrible plague among the Jewish people, is stopped by a very sincere tefillah of David, followed by a korban, an offering reflecting that understanding. And for some reason, that's the chapter that the book of Shmuel uses to conclude its presentation of the life of David. Now, there's something very interesting here in general, which we should note, that the very first story after the birth of Shaul himself is the destruction of Shiloh. The last time that the site of Shiloh is mentioned in Chumash is in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph, and it's quite clear that Shiloh was destroyed when the Aron was taken. Remember, Eli's sons were killed, and Eli died, and the Aron was taken captive. We don't hear about the Mishkan and Shiloh afterwards. In Sefer Yirmiyahu, in Perek Zayin and in Perek Havav, in chapter 7 and 26 of Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu tells the people, "Ki Shiloh yabayit hazeh." He warns the people, if they don't do proper tshuva, the fate of the house of God in Yerushalayim will be the same as the fate of God's house in Shiloh. So we know Shiloh was destroyed by the enemy of the Jewish people. And it only makes sense that Shiloh was destroyed earlier in the time of Shmuel, quite soon after Shmuel was born. And that was the first nevuah of Shmuel. So the book of Shmuel opens up with a story of the destruction of Shiloh, and it concludes with the story where we find the site where the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt. So in many ways, there's a type of closure within the book itself, where the first story talks about the destruction of the site of God's house, and it's going to conclude with choosing, and the story that leads to the choosing, of the place of the construction of God's permanent house. So here we find four chapters, This last chapter also seems to have happened a bit earlier in the life of David. We'll see that it's also recorded in the book of Divrei Hayamim, almost word for word. There it's going to be in chapter 21 of Divrei Hayamim Aleph. Definitely not the end of the book, towards the middle of the book. And it seems like we have four stories at the end of Sefer Shmuel, which happened earlier in David's life. So why are they recorded at the end of the book? If we return to our entire approach of identifying units, prophetic units, in the book of Shmuel, here I think we have a unit, you could call it sort of leftovers, but I think they're more than just leftovers. There's four stories that happened earlier in the life of David, but they were written by a different Navi. There's no doubt that chapter 24 was written by the Navi God. It says so in the middle of the story. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, that story is written by the Navi God. So chapter 24 is for sure attributed to the Navi God. Chapter 23, all the Giborim of David, all his great warriors and the men who he fought with, would also make sense being written by David, by God, because we saw from chapter 22 in Shmuel Aleph that the Navi who was with David when he was running away from Shaul and running away and being chased, and at the same time fighting his enemies in the area of the Plishtim, the Navi who told him where to go and what to do, we saw that in the first several psukim of chapter 22, was again the Navi God. And it seems to be that the Navi God was a Navi with David during the early years of his life, when he was running away from Shaul and having that entire rivalry, where Natan is the Navi of David later in his life, and to support that, we see Natan also being the Navi of the King Shlomo. So if Natan is around in the time of Shlomo, and we don't see the Navi God in the time of Shlomo, it makes sense that Natan comes a bit later, and the Navi God is earlier. So if we look at the Navim who were involved in the life of David, Shmuel is the first Navi, who's already quite old when David is young and first being anointed. So even though Shmuel appoints David and anoints him and sets this concept of Ruach Hashem Ra'an Tova early in his life, the Navi God, Gad HaChozeh, as he's referred to, he's Navi involved with David in the time when he fights Goliath, as he explained that story of David and Goliath. He's also the Navi who's with David when he's running away from Shaul, running away in Midbar Yehuda, running away in the area of the Plishtim. And he also seems to be the Navi with David earlier in his kingdom. And later in the life of David, when he wants to build a house for God, the Beit HaMikdash, when things are settled down, when he brings the Aron to Yerushalayim, and the incident with Bathsheba, those units are written by the Navi Natan, the Navi who accompanies David in the later years of his life. So here we have four chapters, earlier from the life of David, events that seem to have happened much earlier, and therefore we attribute this entire unit to the Navi God. And even though these stories could have been recorded earlier, if the book of Shmuel was actually a chronicle, they should have been recorded earlier. But because the book of Shmuel is composed by different units, written by different prophets, and each unit once stood alone, the author, the Navi, who puts together the book of Shmuel, in its final form, takes and quotes each of these units and presents them one after the other. In our last year, we're going to try to understand the meaning of that presentation and what we can learn from it. But for the purpose of today's year, we have four stories that happened earlier in the life of David, which the book of Shmuel uses as the conclusion of its presentation. Again, for a much more complete explanation of why, we're going to return to this topic in our next year, which we conclude our study of Sefer Shmuel with. For the remainder of today's year, because we've touched on the book of Divrei Hayamim, I want to dedicate 5 or 10 minutes to explain the difference between what's recorded in the book of Divrei Hayamim and what's recorded in the book of Shmuel. Neither book is chronicle, even though we call Divrei Hayamim chronicles. That name is quite misleading. When we say chronicle, we assume that the purpose of the writing of the book, the author's intent, was to tell over history. And even though the book is called Divrei Hayamim, we're going to see that Divrei Hayamim is not a simple, straightforward chronicle. This is a history of the life of David, or the history of the Jewish people. Instead, we're going to see how the book of Divrei Hayamim is a very specific history. In many ways, it's a spun history that focuses on one primary topic of the life of David. And that is all the efforts made by David to build a house for God. First, let me explain why that would be the topic of the book, and then we'll try to prove it. The book of Divrei Hayamim, according to Chazal, was written during the Second Temple period, meaning Divrei Hayamim was composed way after the book of Shmuel. And the author of Divrei Hayamim, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the men of the Great Assembly who wrote Divrei Hayamim, who were writing it in the beginning of the Second Temple period, are fully aware of the book of Shmuel. In fact, if you look, which we saw already earlier, the last pasuk of Divrei Hayamim Aleph, in chapter 29, verse 29, It tells the reader, if you want more information about David, look at the works of Shmuel HaRoeh, Gad HaChozeh, and Nathan HaNavi. If you want more information about David, there's three prophets who write about it in their books of prophecy. We don't have either of those three books. Some of those works are quoted in the book of Shmuel. Some of those works are quoted in the book of Divrei Hayamim. But why would we write a story about the life of David and not the Giborim of David? Why would we quote so many stories and present them early in the Second Temple period? The reason is very simple. If you recall your history of the Second Temple period, in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, there's a very big argument among the people, is this time to build a house for God or not? If you recall, when the Jewish people returned in the time of Koresh, when the new Persian Empire took over and allowed the Jews to return to Yerushalayim and build a house for God, as Yirmiyahu had predicted, there was a call by the prophets for the Jewish people to leave Galut, to leave Babel, and return to Yerushalayim to build the temple for God. Some people returned with Zerubbabel, many didn't. And the two prophets who accompanied the Jewish people at that time, Haggai and Zechariah, constantly encouraged the people to make an effort to build a house for God. Unfortunately, the situation is very bad. The first 18 years, they're unable to build the house. And when there's another king, a new Persian emperor, his name is Darius the Great, there's a new opportunity when he becomes king to build a house for God. And the opening lines of Haggai tell us exactly this situation, where Haggai quotes the people, as if, Ha'am azamru, lo et bo beit Hashem libanot. The people were saying, this is not time to build a house for God. And if you read Haggai, it's only two chapters, very worthwhile reading, in very simple Hebrew. Haggai encourages the people, it is time to build. And if you take an initiative and you begin to make an effort in building a house for God, God will help you solve the rest of your problems and your economy will get better and maybe you'll achieve sovereignty sooner or later and you'll start winning battles. The people being very depressed in the beginning of the Second Temple period are given direction and given hope and given motivation by Haggai and Zechariah that it's possible to make the Second Temple a success. Now, if that's the prophetic topic in the beginning of the Second Temple period, where the people need inspiration to build a house for God, where the people are depressed and think this isn't time to build a house for God, and need a model of behavior to show how they need to act, the Anshe Knesset HaGdola in the time of Bayit Sheni put together a beautiful work, especially the section in Divrei Hayamim Aleph from chapter 10 through chapter 29, which is the main part of the book. We're going to see in those chapters that discuss David, the primary focus will be all the efforts made by David to establish the capital in Yerushalayim and to build a house for God. The amount of detail which relates to Yerushalayim and its capture, and the amount of detail which is dedicated in that book to the building of Yerushalayim and establishing the bureaucracy which is going to run the temple, is way beyond the proportion of what's found in the book of Shmuel. If you recall in the book of Shmuel, from chapter 5 to 8, we focused on that concept of capturing Yerushalayim, bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, wanting to build a house for God in Yerushalayim, and winning some battles in the area around Yerushalayim. That was chapters 5 to 8. We said that unit began with the opener, Ben Shloshim Shana David B'Macho, and ended with the idea that David did Tzedek U'Mishpat for his whole nation. We dedicated an entire shir, even more than one shir, to that unit. Those four chapters in Shmuel are expounded upon in Divrei Hayamim in about 20 chapters. And I want to show you that, and what we're going to do now is we're going to take 5 minutes and go through the main topics in Divrei Hayamim Aleph to show you that the main topic is going to be all the efforts made by David to build a house for God. And this history being presented to the people in the beginning of Bayit Sheni, its primary goal, its primary purpose in its composition at that time was to be a source of inspiration to the Jewish people to learn from David, for David to be their model of how Yerushalayim needs to be built up. The first 10 chapters of Divrei Hayamim Aleph are simply genealogies, very long genealogies, and the reason for so many genealogies during that time period, actually the first 9 chapters, the reason for so many genealogies is because there's a big question in the beginning of the Second Temple period of who's a Jew. Not as much has changed, if you noticed, between the beginning of Bayit Sheni and our own time period. There's a question of who's Jewish, there's a question, should we build the temple, shouldn't we build the temple? There's a question of people needing inspiration. And because there's a question of who's a Jew, there's a need to know the Yichus, who is Jewish, who isn't Jewish, whose family is from where. And the first 9 chapters is a unit that stands alone, which deals with genealogies. In chapter 10, we begin the story of David. And the story of David begins with the death of Shaul on Har Gilboa and how the Melucha moves from Shaul to David. A very short chapter. We don't hear about David and Goliath. We don't hear about Shaul becoming anointed. All we hear about is the death of Shaul and how God chose David over Shaul because Shaul didn't follow and listen to God properly. Take a look. That's chapter 10 in Divrei Hayamim. Again, we're not going to do this too much in detail because hopefully we'll get to these prakim in our study of Nachyomi, but it will take probably a year or so from now until we arrive there. In chapter 11, we have a perek which is very similar to perek hei in Shmuel Bet. Here we see how all the tribes of Israel come to David to Hebron and accept him as king. It's almost word for word what we saw in Shmuel Bet perek hei. And here in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, perek yud Aleph, in chapter 11 in Chronicles, we see almost the same topic in the same words. And then we have Ben Shloshim Shana David B'Mocho, David being king when he was 30 and reigned for 40 years. The story of the capture of Yerushalayim. And then in chapter 11 in Divrei Hayamim, after we have the capture of Yerushalayim, there we find the list of David's Giborim. If you look in Perek Yud Aleph, the first 10 psukim or so talk about how David captures Yerushalayim and how he built up the Milo and the area around here, David. And a pasuk Tet, also a pasuk we had in Shmuel Aleph, Vayelech David halach v'gadol v'Hashem tzvotimo, David became greater and greater and God was with him. And then in Pasuk Yod, Eile Rashei HaGiborim Asher LeDavid, etc. These are the soldiers and the Giborim of David. And we have a list of all their stories and their names and who they were and the groups of three, etc. Very similar to what we had in Shmuel Bet Perek Chav Gimel. So we see one of the last chapters in Sefer Shmuel, one of the units which we attributed to the Navi God, here is recorded in chapter 11, in the very beginning of the story of David in Divrei Hayamim. Chapter 12 also talks about the Giborim, and if you look at the end of chapter 12, we're told, Pasuk Lamed Chet, verse 38, Kol Eilan Shem Melchama, etc. Bo Chevron, all these men of war came to David to Chevron, Lamlich et David al Kol Yisrael, V'gam Kol Sherit Yisrael Lev Echad Lamlich et David. All these great warriors came to David. So here we see this list of Giborim, which for sure was earlier in David's life when he became king in Hebron, and then that was our proof that the events recorded in chapter 23 in Shmuel Bet, in the end, actually happened very early in David's life when he first became king in Yerushalayim, when he moved his capital from Hebron to Yerushalayim. Perek Yud Gimel in Divrei Hayamim is what we saw in Shmuel Bet Perek Vav, the story of how David makes counsel with all of his men and all of his leaders, and they decide to bring the Aron of God to Yerushalayim. And there we even quoted the Pasuk in our previous year, in Pasuk Gimel, V'naseh bet Aron Eloheinu Eleinu ki lo drashnu bimei Shaul. Let's bring the Aron to Yerushalayim because we didn't care about it in the time of Shaul. David is making every effort to make Yerushalayim not only the capital, but a house for God. And therefore, chapter 13 in Divrei Hayamim talks about David bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and then the story with Peretz Uzzah. But here, instead of being one chapter, this goes on from chapter 13 and 14 and 15 and 16. It's much more detailed in Divrei Hayamim. And when he brings the Aron to Yerushalayim, we talk about the choir that he sets up. And then we also talk about a beautiful Mizmor Tehillim, a beautiful prayer to God that was composed when they brought the Aron to Yerushalayim. And that's going to be Perek Tet Zayin in Divrei Hayamim, chapter 16. In the beginning, he talks about how the Aron comes to Yerushalayim, how David gave out a little package to everybody. Those psukim we also found in Sefer Shmuel. And then we're told, in the end of Pasuk Zayin, Vayomahu, Az Natan David Barosh, Lodot Lashem Biyad Asaf Ve'achav. During that time, David appointed Asaf, who we're familiar with from Sefer Tehillim, Mizmor LaAsaf. He was a Nevi appointed by David to be the head of the Levites. And then in Pasuk Chet, Hodu Lashem Kiru Bishmo, Hodi Obamim Alilotav. Psukim we're all familiar with, we quote them every morning in Psukei Zimra. The Mizmor of Hodu Lashem Kiru Bishmo, Hodi Obamim Alilotav, which we quote every morning, is actually the Mizmor that was written by Asaf and David when they brought the Aron to Yerushalayim and made a permanent site for it there before they built the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, when you study Divrei Hayamim, you'll appreciate much better the efforts made by David to build a house for God. Again, the events in Divrei Hayamim help us understand much better why David is chosen over Shaul. In chapter 17, we have the parallel, almost an exact copy, of Perek Zayin in Shmuel Bet, David's request to build a house for God. And God answering, not yet, not you, but your son. I mean, not yet. Recall also that God's answer of not yet was because we didn't reach Menucha v'Nachala yet. David thought, as we explained, that they had reached Menucha v'Nachala. They had reached enough stability and security that it was time to build a house for God, as explained in the book of Sefer Dvarim, in chapter 12 in Dvarim. God tells David, not yet. Menucha v'Nachala has not achieved its fullest sense yet. And therefore, in chapters 18 and 19 and 20, which is very short in Divrei Hayamim, we have the stories of the remaining battles of David around Yerushalayim and the surrounding area, which proves that we had not yet reached Menuchah v'Nachalah, and therefore we have very limited stories about battles of David in those three chapters. In chapter 21, we have the story of David counting the people and the plague coming, and the whole story with David and God and Niflana Biyad Hashem, the exact same story that we find in the end of Shmuel Bet, chapter 24, the concluding chapter of Shmuel Bet, is only chapter 21 in Divrei Hayamim. And we have one little detail added at the end of that chapter, which is a famous one. Actually, it's the first pasuk in chapter 22 in Divrei Hayamim Aleph. V'emar David, Zehu Beit Hashem Elohim v'zeh Mizbach Lola L'Yisrael, where David announces this will be the site to build a house for God, and this will be the site of the Mizbeach, after God answered him when he bought the field from Aravna the Jebusite and built the Mizbeach there, and God answered his prayers. From here on, the rest of Divrei Hayamim Aleph is only about the Mikdash. In chapter 22, David presents all the building plans that he made to his son Shlomo. He gathers together all the foreign workers to use stones and to chisel stones for the house of God. He gets all the building materials ready, even the nails, the doors, all the wood. And in that chapter we saw that that's when he explains to David that he can't build because he was a man of war, he was a generation of war. And giving Shlomo the challenge that he'll be a generation of peace. Ki hu ye ish melucha, v'shalom v'sheket ye b'yamav. He'll be a man of peace, a peace of quiet, and that's a prerequisite for building a house for God. So he presents that challenge and all the material to his son Shlomo in chapter 22. In chapter 23, David organizes all the Levites, all the Levim, into 24 Mishmarot. That's chapter 23 and 24, very detailed. But the famous Chavdalid Mishmarot were established by David, the 24 groups of Levim, and then later 24 groups of Kohanim, who serve in the Beit HaMikdash on a weekly basis. That was all organized. All that bureaucracy was organized by David in chapters 24, 25, 26, and 27. If you don't believe me, you can take a quick look at it. Very detailed. Also, the funding of the Beit HaMikdash by the 12 tribes of Israel is explained in chapter 27. And our point is that all this detail is coming to inspire the people in the beginning of the second temple period. Look what David did in the beginning of the first temple period and use him as a model, as an example of what needs to be done now during Beit Sheni. In chapter 28, David gathers the people of Israel one more time and presents his building plans again to his son Shlomo. Notice the word Vayakel. He gathers the nation together. And David gives a big speech and tells him he had desire to build a house for God, why he can't, why his son needs to. And he charges Shlomo, his son, in public to build a house for God. And he continues that speech in chapter 29. And then his final words, after explaining all the things that he dedicated, in chapter 29, Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Vayvarach David et Hashem l'nei kol ha'kal, v'yomer David, Baruch atah Hashem Elohei Yisrael, Hashem Elokei Yisrael avinu, me'olam v'ad olam, l'cha Hashem ha'gdula, what we quote every day, again in Pesukei Zimra, where David is saying, l'cha Hashem ha'gdula, this building that I'm getting ready, all these accomplishments that I have, they're for your greatness. L'cha Hashem Abdula. The accent is on the word l'cha. It's not me, it's you. That's the last chapter in Divrei Hayamim Aleph. And that's the end of the life of David, according to Divrei Hayamim. And notice, almost all the detail about David in Divrei Hayamim Aleph is about his efforts to conquer Yerushalayim. That's the first thing that happens when he becomes king. Bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim. Wanting to build a Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, getting all the materials ready to build the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, finishing the last battles to secure Yerushalayim, to reach Menuchah v'Nachalah, and finally organizing the nation, the entire bureaucracy, the funding, the choir, the songs, and the inspiration. In fact, David even wrote the music for the dedication ceremony, where we say every morning, Mizmoshir Chanukah Tabait LeDavid. David even writes the song that will be sung at a dedication ceremony of a temple, which he wouldn't live to see, but he dedicated his entire life to building. When you see David HaMelech in Divrei Hayamim, you see a totally different character, and you'll much better understand why he was chosen as Mashiach Hashem. And in our next year, where we conclude our study of Sefer Shmuel, we'll try to put all these sources about David together, from Tehillim and Divrei Hayamim and Shmuel, and try to understand why is it that God picks David as the ideal Mashiach. What is it about his character that makes him so special? Why the units in Sefer Shmuel are presented the way they are? And how these books are being written primarily for the prophetic purpose? What's the prophetic need of these books? Again, we learn a lot of history from them, but we'll use our entire approach that these books are being written to give a message to the Jewish people, to learn from their history and apply it to their existence as a nation representing God. We'll take that approach and use that to explain why each book discusses what it does. And now that'll help us understand our study of the books of Nevi'im.